Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I just want to make the point, I've started with that bit of music because that is what's actually happening now as me and Phil sit down to do the Egg Chasers rugby podcast. That noise there is the German national anthem. Phil, we're sat here at 7:55 on Sunday evening.
Correct.
The World Cup final is about to kick off and we're here.
Priorities, Tim.
Exactly, Phil. This matters that much. So I do hope you enjoy the very latest episode of the Egg Chasers rugby podcast. Let's get going. And we're without JB, which means the introduction will go perfectly well.
Nice and smooth.
Exactly. We're on episode 43 of the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. I'm Tim and he's Phil.
Hi, Tim.
And we don't have JB because he's on his honeymoon.
Yes.
I mean, as I said, we're missing. Let me just make the point again, JB, if you're listening. We're missing the World Cup final. You're on a honeymoon, of all things, and yeah, you're missing the podcast.
You're probably nice and drunk, eating lots of pasta in some Italian bar restaurant. Oh. Watching the World Cup final.
Exactly. Well, listen, as JB's not here, I thought before we get into the rugby action, we could maybe discuss, now he's not here, we can discuss his wedding behind his back, basically. So let's talk JB's wedding for a second. JB as a groom.
Yes.
You were there very close. You were part of the bridal party, Phil.
I was,
How was he?
I think a lot of grooms are probably nervous. JB wasn't really. He was very calm. When I first met him in the morning, so we were helping out with the marquee because there was a few of us in the groom's party, so we were putting up stuff at like 7:30 in the morning, and I arrived and JB arrived, and I said to Jay, "Oh, it's your big day, isn't it?" And he said, what we're not doing the podcast today, are we?
Well, maybe he has got his priorities straight after all.
Well, maybe
the one thing which JB didn't really want to get into the last episode, out of respect for his best man, but is the best man speech. Now, I think we should talk about this for a second. Oh. There are some things that happen, aren't they, that are so bad they're good. It was the most entertaining best man speech I've ever seen.
It was because we know the best man very well. I think for anyone who didn't really know the best man, I'm not sure how much they would have enjoyed it. It was rambling, incoherent, way, way too fast.
The best heckle I've ever heard was during this best man speech when someone just shouted, "Breathe! Breathe!"
He's talking so fast. He swore four or five times.
I know.
In the first sentence, he swore four or five times.
I know. I mean, let's think about it, right? When you bubble it down, and if you haven't been a best man or if you ever are a best man, there are three things a best man has to do. Number one, you toast the bridesmaids. Number two, you thank the parents of the bride and groom. Number three, you toast the newlyweds. If you do nothing else, then you'll have done your job if you just do those three things, and no one will say you did a terrible job. However, this best man, instead of toasting the bridesmaids, I think we need some more appropriate music for this. Instead of toasting the bridesmaids, said, "The bridesmaids are all taken. Oh, F." Instead of thanking the parents of the bride and groom, he said, "I don't know how you four made two such lovely people." And instead of toasting the newlyweds, he said, "Right, see your drink off. This is how you do it." And then knocked back a pint, left his flute of champagne and knocked down a pint of bitter.
He also called their potential future kids little belters.
He did.
And their dog, he called him a gay guide dog.
Deary me. But anyway, it's wedding season at the minute. And Phil, you went to a very special, getting back to the rugby, you went to a very special wedding, didn't you? Or so we thought.
Well, I was at Steph Armitage's wedding yesterday, Tim. which I text to you and JB.
Could not have been more impressed or more jealous.
Yeah, it turns out that it's Stephanie Armitage, who's a friend of my girlfriend, so is not quite as interesting or exciting.
That's the only way she got you to go. Come to Steph Armitage's wedding. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm in. Anyway, listen, thank you for all the contact. We've had loads of people getting in touch in the last week after the podcast, and there we were thinking we were going to be talking to no one because it's the off-season. Well, just the off-season doesn't mean that there's no podcast, unless you're JB, and that means there is no podcast. He's not here this week. But yeah, thank you for all the contact, and a lot of that is going to be used again because, and again, I take it all back. I was dubious as to Phil's talking point last week when you said, let's have a discussion of the best 15 that you could pick if players 1 to 15 were all the same person.
Yep.
And it's got into, and we're going to take it to another level than just chatting about it, as you'll find out very soon. But it's the off season in the UK. It does not mean it's off season anywhere else, and Super Rugby is getting to its crescendo. Have you watched much of this, Phil?
I've not really had as much time to watch it as I'd like. I've seen bits, and I tend to try and catch up on the highlight show on a Sunday evening.
I've had builders in, so I haven't been able to get into my living room for about 2 months. So I've genuinely not watched any of it.
And because I was at this wedding yesterday, I've not watched any of the games. Like I saw all of the results and saw who has now qualified for the playoff positions.
Yeah.
And who secured the home semi-finals as well.
Well, you know, this is when it gets interesting anyway. So the way it's finished up is the Sharks are taking on the Highlanders and the Brumbies are taking on the Chiefs in the... It's not the semi-final, is it?
No, it's like the qualifiers,
it's like the
to
qualifiers
go,
to go through to the semi.
Yeah. To go through to the semis, yeah, precisely.
Which actually does lead us on to a tweet we have got in the last week from Michael Harding, who says, boys, please, on the next podcast, can you try and explain how the Super Rugby qualifying works? It's a little bit out there, don't you think? Well, do you know what? I'm sure JB would be here going, it's just like NFL, because he loves his American football. So interject at any point, Phil.
Okay.
There's 15 teams in Super Rugby. The top Australian team, the top New Zealand team, and the top South African team go through automatically. And then the next three best teams also go through to the qualifying stage.
Yeah. So you have conference tables. So you have an Australian, New Zealand and a South African table. And then you have like one larger table where everyone's put together. So like you say, the first team from each nation automatically goes through. And then the next three teams on the bigger table go through. Coincidentally, this year, the top three teams are Waratahs, Crusaders and Sharks.
One from each nation.
One from each. So you can just look at the bigger table, the overall table, and pick your first... Your qualifiers.
But I was looking at it, and theoretically, by these rules, theoretically, a team could finish 11th and go through.
Because?
Because you could have five South African teams, five New Zealand teams, and then you could be the 11th placed overall, but the top placed Australian team, and you would go through.
Yes, yeah, which is a bit of an anomaly, but I don't think it's ever worked like that.
No, it hasn't.
And certainly this year, it's quite a good split. Although you do, again, you get three New Zealand teams, there's two Australian teams and only one South African team.
Which is unusual because South Africans have been dominant.
But interestingly, South Africa are the only country who, as a national team, will select players not playing in South Africa. So Australia, New Zealand, you have to be playing in that country. So that might be a demonstration that policy isn't as good, or certainly isn't as good for the club side.
For the regional teams, yeah. Absolutely. Well, it's a brilliant little fact, and it's I thought, right, JB's not here, I've got to go and dig for some factage, and I think I've come up goods, right? The team with the best attack has won 13 out of 18 Super Rugby titles. The team with the best defence has won 3 out of 18 Super Rugby titles.
Wow.
In all three of those seasons where the team with the best defence ended up winning overall, the team with the best defence was also the team with the best attack.
Wow. That's a great start.
And if I just complete this fact, this year the Waratahs have been both the best in attack and the best in defence.
Fact.
Have it.
Great fact. Wrapped up in a nice little fact package with that last little bit, Tim.
Which points to the fact the Waratahs are going to win, but the Crusaders have unleashed Dan Carter.
Yes.
They've taken him out of his cotton wool padding and his... What was it in Star Wars they put Han Solo in? Carbonite or whatever. He's been defrosted from his carbonite and he's been let loose on a rugby pitch again.
Yeah, because the Crusaders had a terrible start. They lost like probably four or five games on the bounce initially, but then I think they're
10 unbeaten or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Something like that. 9-10 unbeaten games coming into the end of the season, so they're really peaking at the right time. So
it's pretty mouthwatering.
And, they've also got Kieran Reid back, who's had problems with concussion and is back looking back to his best.
He is. He's
looking effortless, like he does.
Purely on form, it looks like Waratahs Crusaders all the way, but which is a pretty mouthwatering prospect.
Yeah, it should be a great game.
Next season, however, there is going to be one notable absentee from Super Rugby, and I'm going to get a very, very different type of music for this one. The Honey Badger's going. He's leaving Super Rugby.
He is. What a shame. He's also will not be available for Australia for the World Cup next year.
Is that definitely 100% fact?
Well, they will only select from people playing in Australia.
Oh, man, they need to make an exception for the badge.
Get him in the squad. Just get him over here. You can do some interviews, some motivational speaking, that kind of thing. Even if he doesn't play, just get him on the plane.
So if you've not heard, essentially Nick Cummins is going to be going to Japan to play his rugby basically straight after, well, now, but he's going to be going over to Japan straight away.
Yeah, straight after the final game, which was this weekend.
And he's stopping his contract with the Western Force early and with the blessing of Western Force and the Australian Rugby Union as well, because it's a very, very exceptional set of circumstances that mean the Honey Badger's going. Now, some people instantly went, what? What's going on? Is he just chasing the dollar? And actually, the fact is, yes, he is. With very unique circumstances.
Yeah, he's chasing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, exactly. So he's going because two of his brothers have cystic fibrosis and his dad currently has prostate cancer. And they need basically a bit of security financially. And he's taking it upon his shoulders to provide for his whole family.
It's really, really impressive, isn't it? Like, it's fantastic.
It's
incredibly commendable thing to do.
And let me just read a little bit of the open letter that Nick Cummins left. He said, I'd like to take this opportunity to announce to the Australian rugby community my decision to cease playing rugby in Australia to take up an opportunity in Japan. I'll be heading to Japan at the conclusion of Western Force's final Super Rugby match, which is now finished. The reason for my decision is something most Australian rugby community may be aware of. My family is currently enduring some difficult times in terms of their health and well-being. And my time in Japan will hopefully provide me with the opportunity to give back and provide some certainty for my family during this difficult time. It was a difficult decision to make in the context of a Rugby World Cup next year, but the health and well-being of my family is paramount, and the move to Japan is something I have to do for them. I must now put my own interest in the World Cup aside.
Yeah.
Special bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you can't hold anything against him for that. Like, it's a brilliant thing to do.
And he loves a bit of karaoke. Maybe he can provide weekly rugby okey for the podcast while he's out there.
That would be excellent, yeah.
He had a typically, did you see his final post-match interview?
I didn't know. I've not seen it yet.
Oh, check this out then, Phil, because he had a typical Badger performance in his final post-match interview for Western Force.
Last game possibly for the Western Force. How does it feel?
Mate, it feels great, especially with these blokes I've known for such a long time. You know, he's old Wikesy out there, man of the match. How good's he going? Fair dinkum, you know.
Mate, fair dinkum.
Dig a hole and bury him. He doesn't get much better. You got old boy over here. He's come down for the trip across the Nullarbor. Mate, look, it's just great to have a win here in front of the Sea of Blue again, possibly for the last time. But, you know, I haven't heard no fat lady just yet, so we'll take it from there.
How about that try? How good did that try feel when you crossed the line?
Oh, mate, fair dinkum. Come across, I've gone, Wikesy, yeah, give it. He goes, no, 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 push. You push me out. You push me out. I'm thinking, Wikesy's going to throw a long ball here. How's this going to go? Fair dinkum, flicks it across. Buddy, caught it, off like a bride's nighty, meaty, corner, celebrations.com. It's bloody outstanding.
Nick, thanks a lot, mate. You've been good luck.
Thanks, see you, Blue.
Oh, unfortunately, he's only leaving Super Rugby, not rugby full stop.
Yeah, I hope we can still get some footage of his interviews when he's playing in Japan.
Oh, they could get better. It could get even better.
It could get even more ridiculous, no doubt.
Oh, amazing. What a special bloke. And, Stuart Lancaster always talks about making an exception, doesn't he?
Yeah.
For players. But he hasn't done so with your mate, Steph Armitage.
No.
But I reckon, come on, make an exception for the Honey Badger.
Yeah.
He needs to be part of the World Cup.
Yeah. Get him over here. Get him on the plane.
Well, we'll have him as our fourth member during the podcast if he is available next summer.
Yeah, if he's got some media commitments over here, then we can have him on.
Listen, so that's Super Rugby taken care of. Let's bring it back to something we talked about last week. And probably, I have to say, has this been the thing we've had more reaction to of anything we've done? It's got to be up there.
It's up there. I think the
Jared Payne?
Jared Payne, yes. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Jared Payne was definitely, probably the most
contentious. Yeah,
most talked about. But this is right up there.
This is right up there. So go on, Phil, you take it because it was your idea.
So yeah, we're debating who the best player in the world is, and in order to, one of the ways you could potentially find out was if you had a team full of that one player, 1 to 15, which team or which player's team would win. So we discussed it last week, and I picked Manu Tuilagi, Jay picked Scalp Brits, yeah. And Tim, you picked Sean O'Brien in the end, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
But we've had a lot of suggestions on Twitter.
Some backing up our own choices and lots of other ones being offered. And there's been so many, in fact, that what we're actually going to do here, a little box, loads of suggestions that have come in on Twitter to @rugbypodcast, and we're going to draw them out against each other in a last 16 style, and then we'll debate who would go through to the quarterfinals, which we'll then do next week.
Yeah.
So I'll pick out the first one, Phil. Kean Healy.
Good scrummager.
Yeah, that'd be a solid scrum, that. That was suggested because he's a. We were talking about how crucial the scrum could be, and yet but you still need to be able to play as well.
Yeah.
And Kean Healy's going to take on Ben Smith.
Wow.
One of the form players in World Rugby. You pick the next couple, Phil.
So we've got Tom Youngs on the front row, but also played in the backs a bit when he was younger. And Sergio Parise.
Wow.
Who was mentioned, James Bubb and James Nunley. Yeah. Both mentioned Parise on Twitter.
Shout Brits, JB's choice, will play Scott Gibbs.
Wow.
Who Greg Neal suggested for his looking like a prop.
Yeah.
And but playing like a back.
Yeah, but hitting like a back row as well. We've got Kieran Reid.
Oh, that's a good one.
Have you written this down right, Tim? Boris de Chundera.
Yeah, that's his name on Twitter.
This is a great matchup. Kieran Reid versus Israel Folau.
Oh, wow. Have you seen Israel Folau's new haircut, by the way?
No, I've not.
Oh, I need to get you a picture of this haircut before we move on. Have a look at that. He's kind of got blondie. He's got sort of blonde tints in it. From a different angle, it looks like... Do you know that? Are you the emperor penguin that has those yellow...
Yeah.
Sticking out the top of his hair.
I don't know which... I know it's a penguin. Is it a macaroni penguin or...?
It might be one of those. He looks like that penguin with the yellow... bits. The one that in Happy Feet, the movie, the one that Robin Williams is. Anyway, so he's got a questionable haircut. So where are we up to? That's 8 picked out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Next matchup is Sonny Bill Williams.
Ooh.
He got quite a bit of attention on Twitter.
Yes.
Against my suggestion, which was also backed up by several other people, saying Sean O'Brien would be a good shout. Sonny Bill against Sean O'Brien.
That'd be a great, real physical battle as well. We've got Brian O'Driscoll. Suggested by Mike Dunning.
How we missed him.
How
we didn't even suggest him with his ability to play like a back row.
All the skills of, one of the best backs in the world.
Have you got to pick out who his opponent is?
Yeah, pick one more from there. Versus Marco Bergamasco. Sorry, Mauro Bergamasco.
Who has played forward and backs.
Yeah, one of the very few people to play internationally in the forwards and backs. Although his appearance in the backs was... painfully short. He lasted 40 minutes.
Next one, courtesy of John Burton, Andrew Sheridan.
Wow, good player. Front row, dynamic, incredibly strong. He also played a bit of back row when he was younger, didn't he? And when he was younger, number eight. And second row.
We'll play... Oh, this is possibly the ugliest tie in the round. Francois Tranduc, which comes courtesy of Matt McKenzie.
Wow.
Yeah, Andrew Sheridan against Tranduc. I think that would be the one that's on... I don't think the TV companies would be fighting over that matchup.
ITV4 for that one, I think. And we've got my pick, which was also backed up by a few people, Manu Tuilagi.
Against the final one in there.
Who is his Leicester teammate, Nicky Geneva.
Ooh!
Chris Livett suggested Nicky Geneva would oust Tuilagi, yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, that would be the prime, one of the prime time matchups.
Right, so let's go through these then, one by one, and we'll go from our last 16, and thank you very, very much for people getting in touch. We'll go from our last 16 to a final 8, which we will then discuss next week.
Now, I know if JB was here, he would just say every prop would win, every front rower would beat anyone else automatically. But in a real game, could Kean Healy beat Ben?
Oh, hold on. What a waste! Sorry, mess up. Higuain just missed the city. Didn't even hit the target. Sorry. Ugh. This is important. Sorry. we're recording the podcast during the World Cup final. That's the commitment we have. Sorry. So you're trying to say, let's try and back away from that and get ourselves down that alleyway where all about scrummaging.
Yeah. Let's try and look at it. Because Jay was making the point that, well, if the props just knock on every time they get a ball and scrummage, they just scrummage and scrummage and scrummage and win the game. But let's assume that the refs are going to start binning people for deliberate knock-ons, which is what it would be. Yeah. So you can't just do that. So it's not all about the scrummaging.
Yeah.
But power can often beat speed.
Rather than picking so much on weaknesses, you need to focus on the positives of each of the individual players. Might be a good approach to take.
Perfect. Well said, Tim.
So, the first one then. Kean Healy versus Ben Smith.
Now, Ben Smith is probably... well, arguably the form back in the world for the past 12 months.
Yep.
He's played outside centre, wing and fullback for the All Blacks.
And everything he does just seems to make the right decision and make the right call.
Yes, and deceptively quick, deceptively strong, always seem to beat a man. Incredible hands. Versus Kean Healy, who is...
one of the most destructive scrummagers and loose
prop
forwards.
Dangerous runner for a prop forward. He's got a good turn of pace and he can run through and run over people as well.
But you'd like to think if there was a 2-on-2, Ben Smith, Kean Healy, that Ben Smith would find an angle and find a bit of space to get round him.
Yeah, and Ben Smith's defence is also very good. You wouldn't get Kean Healy running over him, I wouldn't have said.
But you can't underestimate how powerful that man is.
Yeah, true.
I mean, I don't think it wouldn't be an expansive game. It would be 10-man rugby from Kean Healy.
Yeah.
But it would be destructive and hard to stop.
I think I'm going to say Kean Healy.
I was edging towards Kean Healy.
I think he'd probably just be able to do it. Because I don't think he'd get gassed particularly by Ben Smith. Not all the time. Certainly if he had a nice drift defence in his team, he'd be able to manage it. But yeah, his destructive power and his destructive running, I think, could just get too much eventually.
I think, yeah, over 80 minutes, I think I agree with you. If you really disagree and you want to shout Ben Smith's corner, then, well, you can tell us on Twitter, but it's too late because Ben Smith has been eliminated. Kean Healy goes through to the last eight.
Good close matchup between two very different players.
It was.
The next matchup is Tom Youngs versus Sergio Parisse.
I think this one's a bit quicker to decide, don't you?
I would certainly agree. Tom Young's a great player, but Sergio Parisse for the past 10 years has been arguably the best number 8 in the world and can do just about everything.
As was pointed out on Twitter, we have people sending us links of Sergio Parisse doing an amazing touch-finding kick.
Yeah.
The guy can do it all. And I was really annoyed at myself. Last week, my thinking behind this was I want a back row player who's a ball player, powerful, good hands, and I didn't think of Sergio Parisse. Can the world take 15 Sergio Parises, though?
Can the women of the world take 15 Sergio Parises?
I don't know if that's possible.
Let's hope not.
But Sergio Parisse goes through. Sorry, Tom Youngs, you're out. Next up, Schalke. This is enticing. This is JB's selection of Schalke Brits.
Yeah.
Up against Scott Gibbs.
Yeah, Scott Gibbs in his prime, not a current... Scott Gibbs, 45-year-old Scott Gibbs. This is a great matchup as well.
This is a great matchup because you can look at the shape of Scott Gibbs and go, he'd actually do all right in the scrum.
Yeah.
I think he'd be useful and, you know, you can imagine him having a massive defence.
Yeah, great defence, both in like the hits and the turnovers as well.
But equally, you could say for Schalke Brits, he's a forward that knows how to play like a back.
Yeah, it's a... a front row forward who can play like a centre and a centre who can play like a front row forward. Brilliant matchup.
It's a hell of a player.
It might be worth saying, Schalke Brits, he's a current international, isn't he? He's playing for South Africa at the moment. To pick him ahead of Scott Gibbs, who 10 years ago, well, a bit more than that probably, was in his prime.
Should we go Schalke Brits?
Let's go, and because it was JV, yeah. Just for Jay.
It's a tight matchup again. So we've got Kean Healy, Schalke Brits, and Sergio Parisse through to the last eight. Next matchup.
It's another brilliant one. Kieran Reid versus Israel Folau.
Arguably the best back in the world against the best forward in the world.
Yeah, if you look at the last couple of years, it's definitely.
I mean, you're a backfill. How good is Israel Folau's?
Israel Folau's running athleticism, reading the game, is second to none, absolutely. Whether he can do everything, because he's only been playing Union for 2 years, whether he has kind of the knowledge of rucking, mauling, whether his hands are good enough to have a team of 15 of them, I'm not quite sure. So in a running game, yes, but overall, I think I'm edging towards Kieran Reid.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Israel Folau, that was a hell of a matchup. And if Israel Folau had come up in some other matchups so far.
Yeah, there's a lot of players where Israel Folau would have easily won.
This is an interesting one. Sonny Bill Williams against Sean O'Brien.
Great game. Great matchup.
That's a hell of a matchup. Now, my initial reaction is Sonny Bill Williams. He can do anything he wants. If he wants to go and be national boxing champion, he'll do it. If he wants to play rugby league and get to a World Cup final, he'll do it. If he wants to win a World Cup at rugby union, he manages it. So I've no doubt that he would manage this massive challenge that Sean O'Brien would represent. He's a tough old cookie, though, Sean O'Brien.
He is. And he's quick. He's very, very strong. All round, very strong.
But I don't think Sonny Bill Williams would find it easy scoring tries against 15 Sean O'Briens.
No. And you've also got to say that I don't think Sonny Bill is particularly much quicker than Sean O'Brien. So he's not going to go around him. He's not going to go through him.
Sounds like a rugby song we were singing at the wedding last week. Oh, just while we're deliberating that, there's one more thing that happened at the wedding last week. But now it was with a load of rugby boys. They started downing jam. There was some party favours on the table. The little jars of jam which JB and his mum had made.
Yeah, very, very kind gifts for all the wedding goers.
Which, within about 10 minutes of us sat down at our table, it began like a drinking game which involved knocking back the jam.
It was a game of fives for who did a jam. And one of the lads did one and made it look a bit too easy. And then more than a few people ended up doing one. You did one, didn't you, Tim?
I did. I really didn't enjoy that at all. What I thought was a lovely gift that JB and his mum had given us as a party favour ended up being diabetes.
Well, they've actually brought, Jay and Layla brought a few more around to our house. So we've got about four more pots of jam just in case we have a few drinks anytime soon.
Right, Sonny Bill Williams, Sean O'Brien. I think you have convinced me a little bit. You know what? I think the Sean O'Brien's power game would defeat Sonny Bill Williams more than Sonny Bill Williams attacking.
Goal!
Was there a goal?
With Rojo and Higuain in there!
Yours must be ahead of mine.
Mine must be a second ahead.
He doesn't know yet.
Offside.
But Argentina have not taken the lead.
Oh!
Now the flag went up very, very quickly.
Let's have a look at this.
Let the boys play.
He is. He's offside. He's clearly offside.
You're ahead of me again. I can't see it yet. Oh, he is offside.
Absolute correct decision again. Oh,
Mark Lawrenson on it. Oh, my God. It's horrible.
It's better than Phil Neville, but not by much.
Not by much.
Anyway, sorry, Tim. Sorry to interrupt you like that.
No, not at all. You can interrupt me for that. Just to reiterate, this is how much we love the podcast and love rugby. We are doing this during the World Cup final. Sean O'Brien, I think you've sort of convinced me a little bit that Sean O'Brien's power game and the hard graft he would do would grind down Sonny Bill Williams more than Sonny Bill Williams' attacking play would grind down Sean O'Brien.
Yes, I'll go for that. Let's see. Sean O'Brien, incredibly through. The next one, we've got two not so good ones and then one great one. Okay. So Brian O'Driscoll versus Mauro Bergamasco, which for me is quite easy.
Yeah, Bod, well done.
Bod, great game, Bod.
Yeah, thank you. It's like Costa Rica getting through to the quarters. You've had a good time. Now do one. right, Andrew Sheridan against Francois Tranduc. Ooh.
It's got to be Sheridan. Sheridan's power.
Yeah, Tranduc's not an athletic enough player to
run
rings around him.
No.
If it was Sheridan and, say, Ben Smith, I might be thinking Ben Smith would have done a job.
Or Sheridan versus Israel Folau.
Yeah.
God,
it's quite forward heavy at the minute. And the last one then.
Tuilagi versus Nicky Goniva. Manu Tuilagi. Now, this is a great matchup.
Right. I mean, this is where you have got to consider every facet of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scrum, line out, ruck, maul, defence, attack, kicking.
Because they've both, like certainly this season, they've both played quite a bit in the outside centre berth, because Manu Tuilagi was out for 3 months with his pectoral injury.
Yeah.
And Nicky Kaniva steps into that position. Equally, Tuilagi's played on the wing a bit when he was younger, and obviously a little bit unsuccessfully in the tour to New Zealand.
15 Nicky Gonovers against 15 Manu Tuilagis. What I would suggest is they would need the full bench of 23 in a game like this. It would be, how physical would that game be?
Yeah. And how good to watch as well. Pace? Do you reckon there's much between them?
No, they cancel each other out in a lot of ways, don't they?
Yeah.
Pace, I'd just say attack in general.
Nicky Geneva's probably a bit more steppy.
Yeah.
Can sidesteps a bit better, but Tuilagi actually running through a man. He's probably 2 stone heavier than Gonova. And actually going through players and drawing players in and keeping on running, he can win that element. Decent hands, good offloads.
Both not the best kickers of the
world. Yeah, both would do lots of other things rather than kick. Scrummaging, I reckon Tuilagi, given that he's about 2 stone heavier, would probably win that and win the close quarter stuff.
Are you edging for Tuilagi then?
I think I am, just on...
Player of the season... In the Premiership, Nicky Gonova.
Yeah. Tuilagi was injured for 3-4 months of that season. I think
look at you, you're loving with Tuilagi once again.
I know. He was my first pick.
Get a room. and that means all of our selections have gone through, so people can then shout that we're fixing it, Fricks. go on then, we'll do that one. Phil just can't get enough. He's dreaming of taking a ride on a couple of horses, him and Manu Tuilagi going up, pitching a tent, and also putting up a tent to sleep in. That means our quarter finalists, and I'm ashamed that Andrew Sheridan's in there, but he's in there, just he got a good draw.
Yeah, great draw for Sheridan.
I've got Andrew Sheridan, Shalk Britz, Kian Healy, 3 front rowers there, and Sean O'Brien in the back row.
Sean O'Brien, Sergio Parisi and Kieran Reid all in the back row.
Yeah.
Alongside Bod and Tuilagi in the centres.
We will discuss the quarterfinals. You can already get ahead. In fact, should we do the draw for the quarterfinals and then we can have the matchups? Okay,
let's get it done.
Put those back in there.
So, first match is Kian Healy versus Shalk Britz.
Interesting. Second one is Brian O'Driscoll against Manu Tuilagi.
Ooh,
that's an interesting matchup.
Ask Warren Gatland what he thinks. We've got Parise versus Sheridan.
Oh, this is an interesting matchup. Kieran Reid against Sean O'Brien. So we'll go through those one more time, and you can give your say on who you think deserves to get through. We're looking for a team 1 to 15 where they're all the same person. Which team would win? Brian O'Driscoll against Manu Tuilagi. Kieran Reid against Sean O'Brien.
Kian Healy versus Shalk Britz. And Sergio Parisi versus Andrew Sheridan.
Interesting. We'll get to that next week on next week's podcast.
Yeah, and when Jay can put his 2 pence worth in.
Oh, he will. Don't you worry about that. He will. There's been plenty of transfer stuff going on in the UK. And we've been spending during the off-season some time just running the rule over the different teams in the United Kingdom and rattling through the Premiership as we have been the last couple of weeks. And we're going to put another 2 teams under the microscope right now. And it's the 2 teams which, according to the bookies, are the favourites to be in the bottom 2 positions in the Aviva Premiership.
Yeah, I'd go for that as well.
Starting with Newcastle Falcons.
Yeah, who finished second bottom last year.
They did.
I think they lost something like 16 consecutive games from about October, November time.
I was there in one of the last games they won. It was away at Sale Sharks. It was a horrible performance by Sale.
And that,
a really dogged performance by Newcastle. How do you see it? I mean, firstly, let's talk about their stash. Have you seen the new kit?
Are they still with O'Ryan, is it?
Gilbert.
Oh, was it Gilbert?
Oh, no, they're
year?
Still with Gilbert. Gilbert had their horrible off-pitch stash. Horrible fleece that Dean Richards insisted on wearing.
The green trim, wasn't it?
Oh, it's horrible. Really horrible. There's a picture of Will Welsh wearing it there. So it's still Gilbert, plain black. And instead of the white design around the collar, they've gone for silver design around the collar.
It's a
standard
kit, yeah.
Is it me or are the badge and the club crest really wide apart?
They're a bit too far apart, aren't they?
Are they just trying to make out that their chest is so big, so muscular, that it's stretching the badge right over the other side of the shirt. I reckon they might be doing that. I don't know. So stash, yeah, fine.
Yeah, solid, nothing special.
Squad and the recruitment that they've made. Now, this is where I think they're falling further behind the rest of the pack.
Okay.
Because I don't think their recruitment is good enough.
Now, they spend what I presume is a lot of money and probably a big chunk of their salary cap on two players. The two Ilagi boys.
Yeah.
Alisana, who's 33 now.
And Andy, or Anitalia.
Yeah. Alisana's been playing in Japan. Andy's been playing Newport Gwent Dragons, but not really playing very much, I don't think.
I don't think he's really played a lot anywhere because he's not very good.
Yeah, yeah.
By comparison to the other two Ilagi boys.
Yes.
Alisana insisted that his brother got a job.
You can look at it from two ways, from the way on the pitch, but also, are they going to draw in the crowds? Are they the kind of players that are going to bring an extra 2,000-3,000 people per home game to a Newcastle Falcon match and therefore justify their transfer?
It's Alisana, isn't it? Let's talk about him.
I don't really
see that being the case. They finished 14 points adrift of London Irish and they finished 6 points ahead of Worcester. So it's only just over a win better off from a woeful Worcester.
Yeah, yeah. And when Newcastle played Worcester towards the end of the season, Newcastle actually lost because, well, they're just not a very good team.
Yeah. They've not really made any signings of note besides those two players.
Rob Hawkins from Leicester's.
Oh, yeah, that's a decent signing in the front row. But I think Hooker's an area they're actually all right. They've got
Scott Lawson.
They've got Scott Lawson. And they had, is it George McGuigan?
Yes.
Who looked really, really useful towards the end of the season when they used him.
Yeah, he actually, because I was watching the Newcastle Exeter game when we were down at BT Sport.
Yeah.
He actually caught Sam Hill, the Exeter and England Saxon inside centre. He made a clean break, and McGuigan, their reserve hooker, caught him.
So I'm not sure Hooker was a massive area of need for them.
No.
They are going to be going into this season. They've got Juan Pablo Sochino, Argentinian player, who was really, really impressive a couple of years ago in the Championship. And I think he's one of those that could be a bit of a surprise package. He's good goal kicker, solid player. I don't know if it's going to follow in the Sam Dickinson kind of mould, pick up a player from Rotherham and he'll have a big impact in the Premiership. Possibly. Biggest issue I have with them is fly half.
Yes. So who is, like, now Joel Hodgson's gone?
It's Rory Clegg and Phil Godman.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Do you remember Rory Clegg when he started off at Harlequins, didn't he?
Yeah.
Came through their academy. And he was talked about like he was like a future England player.
The real deal.
That kind of level, but just never done it. Never demonstrated that he's got that capability. So he's still only young, though. He's still only, what, 23, 24, something like that. He could potentially step up, but I think I'm going to say Newcastle. I reckon they'll finish last. I reckon they'll get relegated this year.
Well, which brings us on to, and let's talk about the plight of London Welsh.
Yes.
So you're obviously predicting that they are going to finish above them.
They won't finish last. They could well finish second last. I think it's almost, I'm saying that I think Newcastle are that bad that I can't possibly see them being anywhere other than last, given their previous performance, like last season finish and who they've brought in.
You've seen it before, though, where people bring in a lot of players and it doesn't gel.
Yes. So London Welsh have brought in 22 players so far, and they're still announcing signings.
Players coming in that have a lot of pedigree and could be potentially excellent for them. Just looking at some of the most notable ones. Ollie Barkley, Dean Schofield, Tim Molinar, Pablo N, Piri Weepu, Lachlan McCaffrey, up-and-coming youngster from the Brumbies.
Corey Britton.
Corey Britton's a decent player.
Mostly recognised for his Sports Centre camera incident.
Ah, of course.
That's why he's recognisable name.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to say it? Was he found?
I think we have said it before, and we're still here.
The story went Corey Britton was photographing a lady in a cubicle next door when he was in the swimming changing rooms.
Yes.
And he was doing it just for the lads, to be a lad. And she spotted him and then she was shouting at him outside the cubicle, come out, come out, come out. And then security and everything turned up. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not focus on that so much. Okay.
So those sign-ins, well, if you look at all their 22 sign-ins, it kind of, for me, splits into two halves. You've got players like Ollie Barkley, Dean Schofield, Piriwipu, Molinar, who are experienced, but kind of, I feel like they're almost past their best. And then you've got a lot of people that have brought in from smaller clubs, lower level, kind of untried, untested at this level. Mm. And some of them may be fantastic players. And you look at players like, well, you've mentioned before, Dan Cole, like Sam Dickinson, who've come up from the Championship.
I think their best signing is Tim Molinar.
Yes.
Of all the signings, I think he's the one that's got the most to offer straight away.
He could make a very good partnership with Tom May in the centres.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really good.
I have to look at it and say, question the Dean Schofield signing.
Yes.
I really don't know what they're playing at there. I mean, he's a big old slice, but he wasn't getting in the Worcester team that got relegated.
No.
I think he's done. Piriwipu's an unbelievable signing. Let's talk about that. That's probably the most eye-catching signing of the summer.
Yeah, we've been skirting around.
Got a World Cup winner. And now tight head prop is completely sorted.
I like that tweet that you posted, Tim.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. Yeah, interesting signing. Big name. I think arguably primarily to draw the crowds in. Having a World Cup winner, you'll get the people of Oxford down and watching the game. Last few seasons, how well has he played? He's had weight problems. He's had, unfortunately, heart problems, which hopefully now are all sorted. But
he's only 29 still.
Is he?
Yeah.
Wow. He had a tough paper round.
Oh, he's just turned 30. Sorry, I beg your pardon. He's 30. But that's not old.
No, no, you're right. Especially not for a scrum half or a tight head prop.
I'm not sure. I think it's going to be a closer run thing. I think London Welsh will do better than Worcester did.
Yes.
I think it's hard to do as bad as Worcester did. I tell you what I don't see. I can see London Welsh's forwards being exposed a little bit.
Right.
Because they've already been promoted and had their best forwards sort of cherry picked and taken out.
Yeah.
And I think I see them struggling up front. I'm going to say no, they still don't have enough that London Welsh will go down.
Right.
So I'm putting them in 12. So should we let JB be the referee and adjudicator?
Yes, we can do.
Let's do that.
Perfect. He'll love that as well.
You can have your say as well. That's only what we think as well for what our opinion is worth. And we'll be running the rule over other teams as the close season comes into play. We've got to talk Banter Squadron!
Brah! Brah!
Now, again, with the absence of JB this week, he's on his honeymoon. I don't think we can actually fully induct someone into Banter Squadron without us all being present.
Yeah, we need the trifecta to agree.
Exactly, but we can talk about this person and then get JB to officially verify or not.
Rubber stamp it.
Rubber stamp it if that's the way we want to go. So, suggestion for Banter Squadron! Banter Squadron is an elite squadron of banter. Safeguarding the values of rugby union, namely good, honest, thigh-slapping, good fun and just good characters and having a laugh and respect and all the rest of it. So we want to celebrate those individuals that are keeping that alive and keeping that tradition going, even through professionalism. And already in Banter Squadron, the inaugural member was Nick Cummins. We've had Donica O'Callaghan and we've had...
Joe Marler.
Joe Marler, of course, Joe Marler. We turned down the NRL player who... Well, it's called, what was the bubbling was the name for it.
Oh, yes.
He started the trend of bubbling, which is urinating into your own mouth. We thought that better stay out of Banter Squadron.
JB was adamant that he should be inducted, but me and you had better sense to him.
Right. Well, this suggestion, thank you very much, Paul, who says, boys, I know he's a referee, but please, I think he should be inaugurated into Banter Squadron. Nigel Owens, the referee.
I can see where he's coming from.
What will you say that? What initially pops into your head with Nigel Owens?
He's normally quite vocal when he's refereeing. He's had a few quite funny moments, quite funny comments to players who are complaining and whining.
Oh, there was that Treviso or Benetton Treviso scrum half who sort of took a little bit of a dive and he went, "Hey, you, it's not football. Come on, get on with it."
And in the Leicester Ulster match in the Heineken Cup this year, he said, I can't remember who it was. He told them that the football stadium's half a mile down the road.
Yeah.
Get on with it.
And for a referee to do that in the tense games that he has to officiate, it's good going. Well, I'm going to show you something. Now, this is a tweet that someone called Uppy Puppy on Twitter sent. They said...
Uppy Puppy?
Uppy Puppy, yeah.
Okay.
They said, this weekend I'm going to become a level one ref. Look out, Mid-Wales. The next Nigel Owens is here. And then his friend, Tom Davey, replied to Uppy Puppy on Twitter. And I'll post a little picture of this conversation on Twitter and said, basically, you're admitting you're turning gay? you didn't think that one through. Nigel Owens himself then replies to Tom and to Uppy Puppy and says, you could never be gay. You wouldn't cope with being turned down by men and women. So he's taken a slur on his sexuality. He's taken some people talking about refereeing, and he's, you know what, he's answered it with consummate humour and banter, and just done it brilliantly.
Great work, Nigel.
There was another example, I'm sure, isn't there?
There was. During the Brazil-Germany semi-final of the World Cup, he tweeted something along the lines of, Brazil would have had a more enjoyable semi if they'd watched Brokeback Mountain. It was something along, something along those lines.
Personally, with him being a referee, now, as a referee, that means he's never going to be able to cut loose in the way that Joe Marler or Nick Cummins or Donico Callahan can, because he has to keep that sort of different...
Yeah, professionalism, but a different type of professionalism.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
The certain lines he cannot cross and then be an official in a match.
Yes.
So when he retires, I think he'll be an absolute hoot.
Yes.
And he probably is in the bar right now. So I think I would put Nigel Owen straight into Banter Squadron.
Yeah, I'd go for that as well.
So, pending JB's final decision to ratify Nigel Owens, well, we've already kind of outvoted him, and I doubt we disagree. But well, anyway, it's a matter of formality. He has to be here. So, next week, Banter Squadron! Could have Nigel Owens a member. Good work. And if you have any more suggestions for Banter Squadron, at Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. There is one more. One final thing to talk about then, and this is something else which was pointed... Well, this is something else. Did you spot this, Phil?
Yes, yeah.
So what's been going on?
So, if you recall, the last couple of seasons, as a pre-season thing, there's been a Premiership Sevens tournament where it's split into three regions. So you've had the North, you've had London, and you've had the South West as three different regions. And they've had Sevens, like on three consecutive weekends, Sevens tournaments, and then the top two from each going, or the top one from each goes into a final tournament. I think a week or 2 weeks before the season starts. And it's normally a mix of, there's a few experienced players who are kind of working on their fitness and a few of the young academy lads. Now this year, there's going to be four regions. So you've got the North, you've got London, you've got the South West, and you've got Wales as well. They're joining the Premiership rugby season, rugby sevens thing. And the Premiership... chief executive has come out with a statement. Have you got it to hand, Tim, the statement?
Yeah, I can. You can read it out from there, Phil. The bond between... that one there.
Yeah. So he said, the bond between Premiership Rugby Clubs and our friends in the Welsh regions gets stronger every year. And that was Mark McCafferty. So that is... It's quite a invidious... comment, really.
Yeah, just saying that statement, he knows what people are going to start, tongues are going to start waggling, doesn't he? As they did, and as they have.
Yeah, because there's already been issues and debate over the what's now called the Guinness Pro 12, or is it Guinness Pro 12? Guinness 12?
The Guinness Pro 12, yeah.
Guinness Pro 12.
They've got a new sponsor.
Yeah.
Which doesn't that, again, the fact it's Guinness sponsoring, does that, I suppose they are a traditional rugby sponsor, but
yeah.
doesn't it sort of, it could potentially be another indication, as we were talking about in previous podcasts, where the attendance and the achievement of the Irish provinces is massively outweighing Wales, Scotland and Italy by some distance.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah.
The Pro 12 officially good for pregnant women. As of now.
Meal in a glass.
But it's an ambiguous statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
He hasn't said the bond. We're really pleased about the Welsh regions being involved in the Sevens. He said the bond between Premiership rugby clubs and our friends in the Welsh regions gets stronger every year.
Yes. And yeah, that's obviously in kind of, can't think of the word, indicating that they're going to continue to get stronger year on year going forwards.
Definitely some subtext there. And you wonder whether Mark McCafferty is one of the people lobbying Premiership Rugby to get the regions in.
Yes. Now, that would be potentially good for Wales. Well, it probably would be good for Wales. It wouldn't be too bad for England, I wouldn't have thought. But for Ireland, it would not be good at all.
That would not be good.
Yeah. That would change things. They'd have to do something pretty drastic, I'd imagine.
But then Wales are in the position where they've got to do something drastic.
Yeah, true.
I don't know the terms of the Guinness deal with Pro 12, but if that can supply a bit of money to fund some teams. Do we know where Sam Warburton's playing, by the way?
Yeah. Not as far as I'm aware.
Oh, my word.
I think he got married last couple of weeks. I saw some pictures on Twitter of him with a beautiful bride. I assume it was his. Yeah. But no idea where he'll be playing next season. Northampton, perhaps?
Maybe. Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Strengthen their squad.
Oh, yeah.
For three games a season.
Yeah. There we go. That's a little story. It could be the starting point of a little story, but I don't know. What do you make about it? I know we have a lot of people listening in Ireland. How would you feel if Premiership Rugby and the Welsh regions joined forces and left you, Scotland and Italy alone?
Yeah, would Italy then withdraw from the Guinness Pro 12?
Is there an argument for Italy having a couple of teams in the top 14 as well in the same way?
Yeah.
Instead of the...
Yeah, certainly.
Travelling
to Ireland,
Scotland and Wales.
Yeah, it'd be a lot easier to get... travel both ways because you get French fans from the south. People going from Toulon driving down to...
Biarritz, Toulon.
Yeah. It'd be much easier.
Montpellier, all the rest. Not Montpellier, Marseille.
Marseille, yeah.
Interesting. So we'll just leave that one hanging. And then, you know what? I reckon there's probably an element of something been missing this podcast with Jay not being here. And that's probably any defamatory, illegal comments. So what can we say before we go?
We did talk about Corey Britton.
Oh, we did. JB would have been approving of that.
Yeah, definitely.
We did mention the trend of bubbling and urinating into your own mouth. We did talk about downing jam. Maybe let's just finish with let the boys play.
Yes, let the boys play.
Let the boys play. JB will be back next week. We'll find out all about his honeymoon. We also played a clip of Nick Cummins, and we'll see if we'll see how fast his bride's nightie dropped. dropped as quick as her bride's nightie, Mac. So we'll see all that. And have a little chat with us in the meantime with all the things we've talked about at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Nice one, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
What's happening in the World Cup final right now?
Half-time, was it? Second half just kicked off.
Argentina, though.
It's a nice Argentinian kit.
You like that kit? I'm a bit disappointed they're not wearing the blue and white. Oh, hello.
The flag has stayed down this time.
Oh my God.
I can't believe you missed that.
Mess. That's unbelievable.
Right, I think we better go and watch this second half, Phil.
Yes.
Well, that's the commitment we've got, and we'll see you on the next one in a bit.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.